In der heutigen Folge habe ich einen unfassbar spannenden Gast, und zwar Miss Jaya. Und das Thema, worüber wir sprechen, ist die 5 Erotic Blueprint-Typen für lebendigere Sexualität, Lust und Intimität für dich oder mit dir und deinem Partner. Hallo, hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Da ist Gold drin. Mein sehr ehrlicher Podcast, in dem wir eintauchen in die ganze Saftigkeit des Seins und die Qualität des Erlebens des Lebens steigern. Ich bin Dana Schwand, Gründerin der Into Being Coaching Philosophie und deine Gastgeberin. Let's Fets! Vielleicht hast du auf Netflix die Show von Gwyneth Paltrow gesehen, Sex, Love and Goop. Da war Miss Jaya eine der Somatic Sexologist und hat mit Menschen rund um das Thema ihrer Sexualität gearbeitet. Auch übrigens eine sehr zu empfehlende Serie auf Netflix. Außerdem hat Miss Jaya auf Bühnen gestanden bei Tony Robbins und mit Esther Perel, also unglaublich erfolgreiche Frau. Ich habe sie kennengelernt, ich weiß gar nicht mehr über welchen Kanal, auf jeden Fall über ihren Quiz, den Erotic Blueprint Quiz, wo es darum geht, die eigene erotische Sexualität wiederzufinden, würde ich sagen. Also was turnt mich an? Was mag ich gerne? Was mag ich nicht so gerne? Wo komme ich eigentlich her? Es gibt 5 verschiedene Typen. Ich habe da irgendwann auch schon mal eine Podcast-Folge zu gemacht. Sie hat jetzt ein Buch rausgebracht, was du unbedingt dir besorgen musst, wenn es ein Thema ist, was für dich spannend ist. Your Blueprint for Pleasure. Super spannend, ist jetzt gerade am 5. Oktober in Englisch rausgekommen. Also im Deutsch gibt es das noch nicht, gerade ganz neu. Aber es ist einfach eine unglaublich tolle Frau. Ich habe, weiß ich nicht, vor 2-3 Jahren ihre Arbeit gefunden und bin totaler Fan. Einfach wirklich super tolle Energie, so viel Wissen, so viel Normalisieren rund um das Thema Sexualität, Genitalien, Intimität, Lust. Also es ist einfach unglaublich schön und ich bin ganz ehrfürchtig und dankbar, dass sie sich die Zeit genommen hat, in meinen Podcast zu kommen, und freue mich wie Bolle, das Interview jetzt mit dir teilen zu können. Let's go. Enjoy. It is the greatest honor, dear Miss Jaya, to have you on my show, on my podcast. I am so excited. I'm so grateful. Thank you so much for the time and taking the space to answer all my questions.
It's my pleasure. I love your excitement. It's so infectious.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited. So I have found your work about 2.5 years ago, and it has changed everything. So I am so excited to get my audience to get a deep dive into your work. But I would like to, before we dive into the blueprints and your book and everything else, I would love to know, because I have read a little bit about your story, and you have sort of taken the path to somatic sexology quite early, like really, really early, even before the time you normally as a kid are into sex, right? And what I read is that you discovered Dr. Ruth, who actually is a German lady. Uh-huh. I don't know anything about her, but I'm really curious. How does someone, and at what exact age, come across a person who talks about sex and gets into that?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Dr. Ruth and all the starts. I think, you know, I was just really young and really interested in sexuality from an early age, super curious. I was like the kid who was like, let me tell you actually where the babies come from. It's not the stork. It's not that story that your parents are telling you.
So what's that age we're talking about?
I was probably like 5 or 6. I was really young. And somewhere, you know, I must have seen Dr. Ruth on television, maybe when I was like 10, somewhere in there, and just was super inspired by this woman who had so much energy and was so alive about talking about this topic that is so taboo.
Yeah.
And so that became, you know, that became just this big inspiration of like, wow, I think that that's something I'd actually really like to do with my life. But I told my parents I wanted to be a doctor instead, because that seemed more, you know, like if I tell them I want to be a doctor, that seems like a better choice. But my mom was really supportive in terms of I was a very free spirit, but I also grew up very religious. So my dad was like the opposite. So I had these two messages growing up of like, lots of shame and Catholicism and this other side. And then my mom was also very just like a live Latina woman. So just also my heritage, my father was German and my mother's indigenous South American growing up. You know, we've learned more about her genealogy because she was adopted and brought to the United States. Okay. And so I had this really interesting mix of like Latina spicy culture and then like German culture that was like German Roman Catholic, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Very, very different. And so just having these two, you know, parts of life in this dichotomy and wanting to be really free and wanting to have this profession, but also feeling like maybe I should tell my parents something else, you know?
So interesting. What I'm wondering is, do you think, because when I met you, well, we have met before, but you know, when I came across your work, what I sensed instantly was this very grounded femininity, which sort of drew me in, even though I found the blueprints before. But when I like looked online and found you, I'm like, okay, this is like the, like just the richness and the groundedness and the taste. So I'm wondering, is that something you felt in that Dr. Ruth? Because I'm like, okay, so that's probably a German lady like this. She's now 95. I just looked it up. Dr. Ruth, did she have that? Is that what drew you in? Or was it like the actual, like physical, sexual thing? What do you think? Or do you remember?
Yeah, I think it was a combination. It was seeing one, this older woman without any shame, talking so big about sex and this topic and like getting on all of these radio shows and being in media and just being so open about this topic that we don't talk about. So it really was like that blend of she was grounded and she knew what she was talking about and she had that sensibility about her. But then there was also freedom of we're going to talk about this topic and I'm going to make it fun and we're going to laugh and it's okay because I think she had an approachability. And so that was always something I set out in my career was to be really approachable and to be able to speak to anybody, no matter, you know, if they were very conservative or if they were very open, to have a bigger, broader reach. And I think that's something that she really inspired me to do was, okay, well, how do I talk to everybody in this realm, even though some of my own systems are very esoteric or it might seem really out there or it might seem like really sexual, how do we come to a commonality where we can all hear the message? Because not, you know, looking at the person delivering the message and going, you know.
Yeah. So how did you come to that freedom within yourself? So that's like a me question. Like, I want to know. I mean, Donna, I want to know how to get there because like I'm on my journey and your work has done a great job already. But, and I'm all about normalizing all the things we are sort of stuck in shame with in any area of our lives. But that in particular, there's so much intimacy and so much misunderstanding and so many body shame, like there's so many layers of shame. So how did you get there? Like, or maybe you started there, but how did you get there?
No.
And also, that question first. So many questions.
Yeah. You know, I think you just get these messages early on about your body and about, and I don't think we escape it. I think all of us in some way have some area in which we feel shame. And I love Brené Brown's idea and definition around shame, which is the shame is the voice that says, I am the thing. Like I am bad, the monster. I am this versus a behavior that I have done that maybe I feel guilty for having done. So this shame voice, I think, came in me from religion, from, you know, my father being very, women should be this certain way. gender-wise, and also because of what religion says, you know, children should be seen and not heard, women should be submissive to men. Like, these were all messages growing up, and that it wasn't especially okay to be a sexual woman, you know, to have pleasure, be in that aliveness. And so I didn't escape it. And then I grew up also with a lot of trauma in my history, because my father was also an alcoholic. And so this internalized shame was, I must be a monster if I am being abused in such a way. The only way that my young mind could explain it was, something must be wrong with me. Yeah. I must be the one who is the monster. And so luckily I had people early in my life who took me under their wing. Either it was a teacher, or it was some adult in my life, or I was very young when I got involved in tantric sexuality and spirituality. And I had mentors there. And I really, like, there's so much value in having mentors in life, I think, especially when you're a child growing up in an environment where your parents are not the, you know, like, they're mentoring you, but not in a positive way. Yeah. To have those positive mentors. And so part of my journey at the very beginning was just recognizing, oh, maybe there is a journey to go on of healing. And maybe I'm not this bad thing that church and parents and everything have ingrained in me. And I remember being very young and being very into pleasure and feeling like, oh, okay, God, I promise I'll stop. You know, I promise, you know, like praying at night, because I had those inherent messages so deep inside. Yeah. So what did the journey look like? I think that's the, you know, the question that you're asking is like, okay, well, what happened on the other side? And it started with mentors, but also just, I was a book person. So I would go to the library and I would get out books to like read about the body or anatomy and physiology, or what other people had to say about sexuality. And I just started to take it in my own hands, which is unusual, because I think a lot of young girls, especially in high school, and there's a great book that I love called Dilemmas of Desire that talks about these 100 girls that they interviewed. And for the majority of those girls, it was 98 of them, sex just happened. It wasn't something that they planned. It wasn't something they took into their own hands. And that's where I was a little unique, in that I went to my doctor and said, hey, I want to learn about my anatomy. Hey, you know, like, I want to learn about this thing, sexuality, and I want to know what this is like. I want to know what I might experience. And so reading a lot of books, having mentors was the beginning. And I think that this journey for me of unraveling shame about trauma and who I am actually has gone on in my life until even the last 5 years. Really getting those last bits of trauma. And that has come from embodied practice, breath work, spirituality, psychedelic medicine has helped me immensely in the last, that was really the last pieces that I am a monster is still ingrained inside of me, really helped. And, that, you know, part of that is the CPTSD. For those of you who don't know what that stands for, it's complex post-traumatic stress disorder. Which essentially means that every day of your life, you were in some kind of threat. So it's not like one inciting event that created the PTSD. It's that there were a lot of events over your childhood as your brain was developing. And so that was, psychedelic medicine was something that actually helped me to really heal the shame of, I'm inherently rotten, that abuse had created, that allowed me to move out of that. So I wouldn't say it was any one thing. I would say it was like finding that next step, finding that next thing and not giving up, even though people told me like, you're never going to heal. This is always going to be just something you're going to have to function with. It's like, no, there is an answer here to helping people heal.
Yeah. So interesting listening to it, because it sounds to me that it's quite a deep and still normal way, like in my perspective from my work, normal way of healing it. I sort of, just realizing it now, I had assumed that sexuality, like the physical part of it and the intimate part of it, would make it that the healing journey is somehow different, which is an interesting thing to assume. Yeah, but that's interesting, because when you said, okay, there were mentors, I actually, me and my husband, we did do a little bit of tantra. This is like 15 years ago or something. But I think it's even harder to move to mentors in that area. Like, you know,
in sexuality.
Yeah, in sexuality. Like, you know, get someone to talk about, you know, your mind stuff is interesting also. But then in sexuality, like, there's a whole different, you know, okay.
I agree. There are people who will like watch for like 4 years. They'll watch me for like 4 or 5 years,
yes,
sometimes in a decade before they'll like reach out and say, oh my gosh, I think I'm ready finally for a sex coach or like somebody to mentor me. I really do think it's like a final frontier of personal growth. Like, you know, we'll look at all these other places, our diet, you know, psychology, but like not sex, not that one. And still even, you know, it's even surprising to me as this book, my book is coming out and I've been doing a lot of media.
Yeah.
People who are still really shaming in the comments or,
really?
You know, oh, this woman's just, she's obsessed with sex or, you know, sex is overrated. And it's just so fascinating to me always to hear these, like, there's still such a viewpoint of sex negativity in the world.
Yeah.
Versus understanding that sex is fundamentally a big piece of who we are as human beings. Like, none of us would be here if somebody didn't have sex.
Yes. And
so it's part of life. I mean, everything in life, animals, plants, has a process of procreation. And we can take it from that animal aspect into sexuality and sex being something that isn't just about procreation. There's nothing wrong with that because, again, life wouldn't prosper if we didn't have that.
Yeah.
But there's also utilizing sexuality as a conscious tool for intimacy, connection, well-being, spiritual awakening. You know, there's so many things that sex isn't limited to what we've imagined it to be. And I think it's because limited definition that we still have this idea that it's not important or it's overrated. And I'd say for somebody who's just thinking like, oh, sex is overrated, maybe you haven't had sex worth wanting yet. Maybe you haven't found your way.
Yeah.
Sexuality and pleasure is something that really vitalizes you or helps you grow spiritually.
And it's not dirty in any or shameful in any way. Yeah. But that's interesting because before I found you, like, I'm really like, I love my husband and we always have like, well, apart from this area, this era when having kids and sort of moving in different directions, but we've always had fun in bed and we enjoyed it, but sort of looking into it, being like, we've been together for more than 20 years now. So that's been a while. And we did it regularly and then sometimes a little more and then sometimes a little less. And what I found is where's my turn on? Where's my, like, the juice? I realized that, I've got like a slight tendency to control things, like in general in life. So, What I realized before I found your work, that I somehow felt like I was sort of in surrender and I liked what we did in bed, but I always had to sort of motivate myself to do it because I sort of had lost touch with that juicy turn on feminine side within me. And I thought, okay, so maybe, you know, because we've been together for so much time and, you know, we've got two kids and all the stuff. So maybe that's just the way it is when you grow older. And then I found your work and realized that I had just been so far off my erotic blueprints that it, like, there was no wonder that I had lost touch. So I would love to go into the blueprints. But before that, I would like to know how to, or maybe we should do that question later. Well, maybe you decide, because one of the questions that is burning is how to actually integrate the knowledge. Because I find, you know, I've known this now for 2.5 years, and I still find it hard to get in touch. Obviously, I can do your courses and read your book and all the things, definitely get mentoring, do all that. But I still try to grasp it in a way that it's sort of, it's so, I can't really get a hold on it. And then I'm, okay, so maybe I should do more self-pleasuring and try to figure it out. But then, it's easier for me to do it together with my kids. So I'm like, really sort of, how? So that's the next Donna question that's coming up. But I don't know if it makes sense to dive into the blueprints beforehand, but you decide.
Yeah, let's do the blueprints and then I'll dive into like, how do we embody any wisdom around sexuality? Because sex isn't just something that happens in our heads, although stuff in our heads can be a huge turn on, but like, you know, bringing it into body, integrating it, because we can learn all the information that we want, but not really put it into practice and integrate it into a new baseline of our eroticism. Which is something I really like to talk about, because a new baseline is when you've integrated it, you're operating from a completely different place.
Yeah.
In terms of what's possible in your eroticism and in your intimacy once that's fully embodied. So really important question. So let's definitely come back to it.
Okay. So the blueprints.
You want to go through
them? What are the blueprints? Let's go. Let's dive into them.
So the blueprints give us a language to help us understand our turn on, how we're wired erotically, and just like any other personality typing system or understanding more of who we are. It helps us to know who we are and then have a language to communicate that to another person so we can honor each other in that. So there's 5 erotic blueprints. And the first one is an energetic. And the energetic is someone who's turned on by longing, anticipation, space, tease, yearning. They may lean more towards the spiritual aspect or the mystical aspect of sexuality or conscious sexuality. Their superpower is that they can have orgasms without being touched. They can go into these expanded states of consciousness where they're touching the cosmos or they're, you know, experiencing what we would call like transpersonal states of consciousness. This is a term from Stan Grof, who was a psychologist, who also coined the term holotropic, which means returning to wholeness, coming to wholeness. Mm. And so this idea of transpersonal, he was part of founding transpersonal psychology, which is this idea that we can touch archetypal energies, like experiencing yourself, you know, maybe as a panther in the jungle and being able to play in that, or experiencing yourself as Cleopatra. You know, so we have these like different archetypal energies that can come in during energetic play. And that's something that energetics seem to have easier access to.
Okay, and then so we need to come back to that, because that's I'm a lot of that and the second one essential. I'm like, okay, I need to understand that or integrate that. Shadow side, go ahead.
So the shadow side, every blueprint has things that excite that blueprint and then things that inhibit that blueprint or things that can use some healing. So the shadow side of the energetic is, because they're so sensitive, because they can feel all of this, they often will shut down if something is too much, too quick, too fast in their system. It's like overwhelms them and they feel, instead of more turn on, they feel less turn on, which is opposite of what I think a lot of sex tips and techniques are like, go do this to the clitoris, something like that. Whereas that's just going to overwhelm someone who's in an energetic system.
Yeah.
The other shadow is that they can kind of dissociate from their body when it's too much too. It's not just turn on, but they start to like go out of their body, and then their body builds this armor up as a protective layer. And so often there's work to be done to start to break that down.
Yeah, I get both. I know both.
You have a lot of energetic in your blueprint.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
The next is the sensual, and the sensual is someone who's turned on by all of their senses being ignited. So touch, smell, taste, awesome music during the lovemaking experience. Their superpowers, they bring the beauty and the richness and the deliciousness to eroticism. On the shadow, however, is that they can get so caught up in their heads, like, oh, that thing's crooked, or the flowers aren't right, or the music isn't just right, or my partner's breast smells, or what's going on in between my legs? All of those thoughts are going on, or, you know, your to-do list, and you get caught in your head instead of being in the deliciousness of this body that you're in and all of the sensory experiences that can happen within the body. The next is the sexual, and the sexual is someone who's turned on by what we think of as sex in our culture. So nudity, penetration, intercourse, getting to the orgasm, getting to the climax. Oftentimes the sexuals and their superpower can go from 0 to 60, like really fast arousal. Sex seems like it's the simple thing for them to get a lot of pleasure from it. Sex is also something they utilize to relax. So whereas like a sensual needs to relax and have this beautiful environment, a sexual is like, let's do the thing. And then we relax after the sex, because the sex is something for a sexual. It's very much like food, air, or water. Like if they aren't getting that, there's something feels wrong in their system, which then leads to the shadow side, which it can feel like there's this scarcity in them. And they also have this very limited definition of sex, which is sex equals, you know, penetration, orgasm. If we're doing that, everything's good. But for an energetic or a sensual, as I mentioned, that's not what is the best type of sex for them. And so there's often, I'll hear from my sexual clients, like, but we're having orgasms, what's wrong? Mm-hmm. And so there's this, because of the limited definition, there's this missing of the journey, and there's this missing of the depth that can happen in sexuality. Not that sexuals aren't deep and lack depth. It's just that they often, if they're really caught in the shadow, just have such a limitation to what sex is. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah.
Ready for the next one?
I'm ready.
Okay. The kinky is someone who is turned on by what's taboo. So this is whatever's taboo for you. So this could be psychological power play, submission, dominance, something like that. And then with the sensation base, it's more about like maybe it's rope bondage or it's impact. Spanking, for example, would be something that might be impact play that you might be very turned on by. My partner, Ian, is a kinky. And it's really interesting because we went through a period where we were kind of in a sexless situation, not having a lot of sex, definitely not the quality or quantity that I wanted, being a sexologist in this corner. And you know, he would initiate sex by cuddling. And I would think, oh God, he's cuddling again. Like, we're not going to have sex. I'm like rolling my eyes. And I'm initiating in the sexual blueprint, which was, I would touch his genitals. I would say, let's have sex. You know, we'd be like home, driving home from a date. And I'd like touch his genitals in the car. He'd be like, what are you doing? It would just totally irk him. So I couldn't figure out like, well, what is the end? And that's kind of where the blueprints came from, was also me trying to solve this in my own relationship. And so it turned out he was kinky. And so he's primarily kinky sensual. So he was initiating sex in the sensual because he had a lot of shame, because the shadow aspect of the kinky is shame. So he had shame about, I want to be tied up, or I want to dominate you, or all these different things he wanted to explore within this kinky realm. And so when we took my own quiz, I was zero kinky and he was zero sexual. I'm highest in sexual and he's highest in kinky. My second blueprint is energetic, where I'm almost exactly the same as sexual. And he was 5% energetic. And I was 5% sensual. So we're completely flipped in terms of our blueprint. So that's one thing that was so fascinating, was like, okay, so here we are. Like, now we see what the problem is. The problem isn't that we don't love each other, don't want to connect, don't want, you know, to go on this journey together. It's that we're actually don't even know how to speak each other's language.
Yeah.
So then I set out to learn kinky. And he set out to learn energetic and heal his shame around sexual blueprint, because he had zero. Because he'd shut down that part of himself. Like, he wanted to be a good guy. So I'll shut down that part, because then I don't want to impose my sexuality on women. And so it was just a fascinating journey. The key was that we were both willing. We were both so willing to go learn and do the work necessary to start to learn how to speak each other's languages. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the beauty in it, I think, as well, that it can be this beautiful tool to like come closer to each other, like have a great sex, but also this underlying topic of sort of bowing to whatever it is that you are. And yeah, it's like, I think that's really beautiful. But there's one more, right?
Yes. The shapeshifter The shapeshifter is someone who's turned on by all of it. So if you heard yourself in like all of these blueprints, you may be a shapeshifter. The superpower of the shapeshifter is that you can shapeshift to please anybody. So you're a really amazing lover oftentimes is because you're like, oh, idosensual, I can do that. But the problem with that is you're always shapeshifting to please other people. So that can turn into a shadow of you not being fed yourself. And, you know, oftentimes the shapeshifters are the most starving. But in their superpower, they can have all of the blueprints in terms of all the superpowers. Yeah. And then they also have access to this extraordinary erotic intelligence and sophistication and wholeness. I believe that we're all shapeshifters. However, we've been conditioned and programmed into one thing and we've cut pieces of ourselves off and we're not actually expressing the fullness. Mm. Nobody's broken. We're all whole. We just have this covering on top of ourselves, or we've locked a little like that part, the sexual part's not okay. I'm going to lock that in the closet somewhere. Like my partner had done, that part's not okay. I'm going to put that away. And then encouraging him to bring that back out, which is exactly what I wanted in our relationship. So yeah. It turned our relationship into sexless to very, very hot. And we're now 16 years together, going on 17. So it's been amazing to have this framework for use in my own life.
So let's start with the question, because you're saying it sort of came from also that you were looking for your solution in your relationship, but obviously you're not just thinking up this blueprint because I want to heal my relationship. Oh, I've got this idea there.
Yeah,
right, it's five archetypes.
Right.
So how? I know you did a lot of like therapy, like sex therapy. So maybe you can speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, part of it was working with my clients as to how that also, my clients sometimes are my best teachers. Oftentimes the thing that I'm most needing shows up in like, it's like a theme among all the people I'm working with. I'm like, okay, everybody is coming to me with this one thing. And so oftentimes it's me going, okay, let me pay attention. Let me pay attention to what my clients are teaching me. And then things will kind of download because I'll see a theme or I'll see something that comes in. And then I'll take that, like, for example, with my partner and I, with it took me 5 years before I spoke about the blueprints publicly. It was all just with my work with my clients and seeing, okay, how does this work? And how does that land? Does that resonate? And it did. And then with my own partner going, okay, well, he's kinky. Let me go learn how to expand into that and get mentors and teachers and, let us work together in terms of that. And so that was really powerful. It was kind of like this whole picture coming together.
Yeah. Okay. That totally makes sense. So coming back to my Donna question.
Yes.
I'm mostly energetic and followed by sensual. And my husband is sexual, followed by sensual, which is not as bad as it was for you both, because we're not that far away. So what I did, and that's interesting, because what you explained around the energetic is like putting the armor up or sort of not feeling the like turn on because it's just too much touch, like just too intense. And that's, I think, what happened to me, because like, I could just surrender to the sexual way of doing sex, like just go into like how everybody thinks how sex works. But I think what happened to me is that I armored up, like not in a like very hurt way, but in a numbing way, like as in, okay, so let's do it. And let's do it. And it's nice and I have fun, but it's not like the actual thing. So right. That's really interesting that you said that, because that's a new piece for me. But I think, like, how can I understand? Like, it's for me, it's really hard to understand that blueprint, because I sort of try to practice and sort of sense this, what you said, like the tease, because I'm trying to explain to Matthias, like, so when you not touch me, I don't understand. So if you, but when you then sort of go to kiss me, but you don't, and he's like, I don't, Like, I'm like, I don't get it. I'm like, I don't really get it. Maybe you can sort of, we can explore this a little bit more.
Yeah. You know, I think it's, and this kind of comes to your question too, of like, how do we embody this? And that's, so there's the first step's knowing, right? Okay, now we know our blueprints. We know what the struggle or where the disconnect or the apparent mismatch is going on.
Yeah.
Now, how do we, one, get fed? That's the first piece. Like, how do I, okay, I'm turned on by the not touching, but how do I actually have my partner feed me in that? Or me feed myself with self-pleasure, like you had mentioned also. That's a way of embodying it. Then there's the speaking. There's also the words that you're using. You know, for example, with my partner, I would say, let's have sex. And that would turn him off because there was no mystery to it. And it's very quintessential sensual. He would say to me, can we just let it unfold? And I'm sexual. So like, I want to know that we are having penetration. I'm going to have an orgasm tonight. and so, you know, I had to learn how to speak his language. So then I'll say things now, like, let's just let it unfold. And he's just like, oh my, he'll get the biggest smile. He just loves that. And so I had to learn how to like speak a whole other language, not just with the words, but my body. And that does take embodiment. It does take me going, okay, I don't know sensual. I'm only 5%. What's my resistance to it? Mm. What do I need to learn to embody? Can I take a dance class and start to just get in touch with my sensuality more? Music, because he loves music. So how can I like find pieces of music he loves? Or, you know, like he sent me these kissing videos because I said, how do you want me to seduce you? And he sent me these videos of people kissing. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I'm thinking he's going to send me some porn or something. Yeah. And he's, again, my filter is sexual. Yeah. He sends me these kissing videos. You might as well send me like puppy dogs or something. You know, I'm feeling like romantic puppies. And so I had to go, okay, well, how do I, and keep questioning, like, how do I bring this into my body? How do I make this more like own this? And part of it was the next step. So I talked about feeding, speaking, healing. I had to heal. Like for me, sensual felt vulnerable and not safe. Whereas like sexual, you know, like I know what I'm doing. I can get in there, you know, like and we get it, get our orgasm and then we can go on. And so, you know, there was this vulnerability to sensual and a femininity to sensual that felt so soft. And so there was the healing that, and then also with kinky, because he was very kinky, all healing all of my judgment about that, or is it abusive? And as a sexologist, I really had to go on a deep learning about that whole realm because it wasn't part of my lexicon. I'm zero. So I had to really shift viewpoints and then also how I felt unsafe giving over power. And what does that look like? And how can I create safety for myself, especially with the energetic aspect in a history of, you know, how does all that play out? And then the final piece is expanding. And expanding means that you've fully embodied now the blueprint and it has become your turn on. So I think what you're really talking about in terms of like embodying isn't just, you know, how do I embody the blueprint that I am, but also how to then do I expand and embody the blueprint my partner is as well. And so there's several things that we can do. One, with your own blueprint, what are things that you can do to integrate it into your life as part of a lifestyle? So for example, energetic, just walking around in life, what would have you feel safe? How do you create safety within yourself? Because for an energetic, the overwhelm is often because there's this hyper stimulation of the nervous system. So things that I do that maybe aren't even sexual, but it's vagal nerve stimulation. So the way we stimulate the vagal nerve, because that will help downregulate that really sensitive system, is that we can hum or sing. We could get cold exposure on a regular basis. There are also wearable devices now that people have made that will stimulate your nervous system with light touch, like a little vibration that can help. So there are a number of ways that we can start to just downregulate that sensitivity of the system. Not that we want to take it away because that's a superpower. Other things would be like for your energetic would be like breath work. How are you utilizing breath during sex? Because breath can be very energetic. Mm-hmm. How are you utilizing intention during sex? How are you playing with light touch, where it's not like going straight for your genitals? Maybe you're eye gazing first and you're breathing together. You're doing some tantra. Mm-hmm. Tantra is a very embodied practice, so that can help you to even more deeply integrate that. And then finally, so with Ian, because he had 5% energetic, if you remember,
yeah,
he is now fully expanded into energetic and mm-hmm. fully embodied and energetic. And it happened through something called network spinal analysis, NSA, which is a form of chiropractic that mm-hmm. he did like a weekend workshop with John and Christina Amaral and was able to completely move into energetic. He had access to it after that experience. So there are also like experiences that you can have. And you know, there are things that don't cost any money, like playing with your own skin really energetically,
yeah.
Body, breath, again, like I mentioned, and these things like humming can be very, very powerful for helping you more deeply embody it.
Really interesting and very helpful. I'm already looking forward to going into that. And what I found is that sexual, like we've got, like Matthias is, like highest in sexual, and we've talked to friends about it, and he is as well. And I was wondering, and I'm not sure if I had read that somewhere, but that there is this thing that people, maybe especially men, might think they are sexual because it is so typical, like porn and everything you see and how sex is, you know, displayed in media and stuff. So yeah, maybe you can speak to that a little bit. Maybe because I'm sometimes wondering, because Matthias is like also a lot of sensual, if the sexual is not really like really derived from that, but sort of, yeah, training.
Yeah, we call it sexual masking. And I think it's especially true for cisgendered heterosexual men, which essentially means, you know, they have this pressure of this is the way you're supposed to be as a man in the world. This is what this looks like.
Yeah.
And so you're supposed to be this sexual dude. Very American, especially. Yeah. you know, and so we have this, I think, erroneous and often detrimental viewpoint. I think it does harm to men because we think that, okay, well, they're supposed to be this way. And so there's a projection onto them. And I definitely had this with my partner, Ian. Like, what's wrong with you? You know, I know all the sex techniques. I'm sexy and I'm here in my G-string. Like, why don't you want me? You know, and it's hard not to take it personally.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you know, this is the way that they're supposed to be. And he kept reassuring me, I love you. I'm attracted to you. And so what we found from, we've had over 3 million people now take our quiz online. Wow. And you know, and ask you what your gender is or how you identify with your gender. And we found that across the board, most people who identify as men are not just sexual. And yeah. I think we've limited them in a big way. And so a lot of them have a mask of this. And if anybody's seen the show, the Netflix show, Sex, Love, and Goop.
Yeah, I saw you in that.
A really good example of that.
Totally. Working
with someone, not to give too many spoilers, but if you haven't seen it. But you know, I just feel, again, like I feel so much for men. I feel like, especially now, the environment for men is in sexuality can be very challenging to navigate. And I think we need to leave more room for them to be their shapeshifter, you know, because across the board, they're almost equal in all of the blueprints. And then I'm curious, even because that's just our quiz online and that's what they're answering from their head.
Yeah.
But I'm curious if they go through the experience in their body, you know, how often it would turn out that they're not actually just the sexual blueprint that we've made them out to be.
So interesting. And so sad too, isn't it? Like it's, yeah.
Yeah. So and I think even with your partnership, you know, with, it seems so foreign, the energetic blueprint.
Yeah.
Because it seems so like opposite, but it's just because we haven't developed a vocabulary. It's like we've cut off a whole language, you know. Like,
yeah.
Let's not speak this whole language because we just don't understand it, as opposed to And this is what Ian had to do as he was learning energetic. He just kept having to say yes. He's like, I don't know what this is. I can't feel it. You know, she's more turned on when I don't touch her until, of course, my sexual kicks in. And then I'm like, no, put it in. and so, you know, this him just kept listening. He kept listening and he kept saying yes to it, even though he couldn't feel it at first. And then eventually, you know, especially after that workshop, then he could actually see now the energy coming off of my body. So he can see where the energy is flowing and be able to like move it and play with it. And that again has only been cultivated over the last, I'd say, you know, 7 years of our relationship. And he just keeps getting more and more powerful in it as he's grown into that blueprint. So anybody can learn it. You just have to be willing.
So beautiful. How, if someone is in a relationship where they don't really openly talk about sexuality, and one, maybe the one listening to us now comes across your work and starts to understand probably herself, maybe himself, but probably herself, how can you bring that towards your partner without making it awkward and without triggering shame, which I don't know if there's possibility of not doing it, but yeah, how is there a way? Yeah,
I think that we have to create safety for our partner. If they have, you know, had a really hard time talking about sex, if you haven't talked about sex in a long time, if it feels like it's awkward, I think that there's a level of being able to create safety for your partner, but your partner also has to do the inner work of creating safety for themselves, because we can do all the things to make someone feel safe, but it really is an inside job. So I just wanted to give that one caveat. But one way that you could start is a very simple communication skill called dyads. And a dyad is simply a communication where you go back and forth with the same prompt over and over and over again. And that prompt could be something like, tell me something that would have you feel safe talking to me about sex. That could be like the very beginning place to start is just tell me something that would make you feel safe to talk to me about sex. Mm-hmm. If it is an issue of safety. But other prompts could be something like, tell me something you want me to understand about you and sex.
So just a clarifying question. So that you would ask that question and then you get an answer and you ask that same question again, right? So you do it over and over, the same question.
Yeah, because the important thing here is to take out that it's a conversation.
Yeah.
And the other important thing is you're not trying to agree with each other. You're really seeking to understand your partner, and understanding creates intimacy and safety. And so if I'm practicing, Ian and I do this regularly, you know, even though, because I want to understand more, I want to understand where he's at right now. Things change in our lives. So, you know, tell me something you want me to understand about you and sex. And then they would tell you what they want you to understand. And then I just say thank you to mean that I understand back to them. Mm. And then they might prompt me, tell me something that you want me to understand about you and sex. And you just keep going back and forth. Do this for like 20 to 40 minutes. And you'll have a deeper, you'll have built intimacy and connection. Mm. And you also have a deeper understanding about where they are. And again, remember, the important thing is you're not here to agree. You're not here to have a conversation. You're here to have an effective communication to start to open the door, because you've created a safe space of understanding and really listening to your partner, as opposed to like, you never, we did it. What can happen in a conversation oftentimes? And we're, again, understanding is the key, really understanding.
Yeah, it sounds beautiful to basically talk about it, but not talk about it. And during that process, create this feeling of safety and sort of togetherness without even having sex, but opening the door to that. I think that could be really helpful.
And I'd have it outside of the bedroom, you know, do it over dinner, do it, you know, so that there isn't that like feeling like, oh, now we have to have sex or pressure. And the setup of it too, you know, the setup can be, hey, I heard this really interesting podcast where they were talking about this thing, and I'd love to try it because I want to know you more. I want to understand you more, and I want to create a safe space for us to have a dialogue about this.
Yeah, it's It's so beautiful. Like in my work, which is not around sexuality, even though I've led a workshop around how I practice intimacy or how to get more intimate. I work a lot with normalizing the things we've got shame around, like just normalizing, you know, oh, I don't get it perfect with Matthias if I do like relationship work, or I'm not perfect in my business, or I'm not, you know, just don't expect me to, you know, I'm just maybe in this one bit, one step ahead, but don't, yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. And especially with intimacy and all things around sexuality, I think it's so important. And at the same time, I sometimes feel not really it is hard, but it requires a lot more staying capacity, I'd say, like inner strength to normalize that. So I'm just curious, because you before talked about, you know, people in the comment section, because all of this misunderstanding and, you know, what's been going on around that topic, how do you navigate that to, you know, embody it and live it and talk about it? And then having all this, you know, all this around how it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the normalization comes again inside yourself. The more work mm-hmm. that you do inside yourself, the more people feel that vibration. You know, you talked about like Dr. Ruth yes. at the beginning and like how grounded. And I think that's just because I've done so much work around sexuality that I feel like it's just a normal. I mean, this is what I talk about all day long. So it feels like I'm yes. talking about coffee, you know, or like
yeah.
I'm talking about the weather. And that's because within my own system, I've done the work to peel back all that, all those yeah. layers of shame.
Yeah.
And so how does it become normalized for you in terms of that internal work? And you could even do a dyad with yourself. You know, I'll do these in my journal. Where do I still have shame around sexuality? Tell me a place where you still have shame around sexuality. And then I'll write that out. And then I'll go and I'll work that, you know, I'll do something. Like one of my favorite practices for just reclaiming parts of myself where I'm ashamed or something like that is erotic persona work.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
What that is like my last persona that I did was around aging.
Mm.
Which was really powerful for me, and around just the body as it starts to change, as it starts to age, as I start to show different signs and of like mortality, you know, like this
yeah.
that's still sexy as I'm moving into my cronedom, as I'm moving into the sage aspect of life. And so I did a persona called the bone crone, and she was all about like the sexiness of being in elderhood and being raw, where I didn't wear makeup, I didn't get my hair done, I didn't like all of this, the rawness of aging and reclaiming that could be sexy, because I had shame. Like it was like, I feel like, oh my gosh, as I get older, I'm not sexy. There was a story running in my as my body is changing, going through menopause.
I hear that a lot. Yeah.
And so I completely reclaimed it.
How does this persona work?
Like, yeah, it starts with what's the gatekeeper to this aspect. So for example, I want to reclaim aging as sexy. That's the thing that I want to reclaim because I have shame there. And so what's the part of me that's gatekeeping that? There's a voice in my head that says, oh, that's not okay. You know, as you get older, it's not. Who's that voice? What's that first? Mm-hmm. Okay. Is that an internalized cultural thing? Is that an internalized mother? Is like, what is that? And then helping myself to integrate that piece. So then I have cleared the way. And that could be work with, you know, there's all kinds of different integration tools. There's IFS, internal family systems, parts work. There's different ways you can work with a therapist, something that you can do to integrate that. So then that's cleared. And now let's bring forward the part of me that's the super sexy, wise woman, sage, crone in life. And what does she look like? How does she dress? What does she wear? What is her internal life like? And can I start, how does she move? What is her relationship with others? And I start to look at everything from attachment theory and how is she relationally and what is her attachment style to clothes she wears, to how she moves, to how she thinks. And then what I'll do, my favorite way to embody it is to do a photo shoot, to see myself, to embody it so much. And I have this amazing photographer that I work with. And then she'll take a photo of this persona, me as this archetype, where, you know, I'm finding beauty in all of it. I had this beautiful like bone necklace made by the same artist who made this one, actually. And it's this beautiful snake. It's like a snake skull. And I even had like a bone skeleton. So there was like skeleton themes. And we shot the photo shoot where there was a burn here in Colorado. So the whole ground was burned and the trees were burned.
Kali.
It was total Kali and like ash. I even have pictures with my tongue out as part of
it. Oh, wow. I'd love to see those. Wow.
It's so amazing. Like it was just so, and again, like the first photo shoot where I did no makeup, no hair, I didn't dye it. Like I just let myself be completely raw. And there was, again, so much empowerment in reclaiming aging and rawness and naturalness as so sexy. Yeah.
Ah, love it. Okay. One more question. at least one more question that is around body shame. And yeah, because, you know, like the normal body shame, as in, you know, too much here, not enough there. Skin looks whatever way it shouldn't. Hair, right. Teeth, nose, whatever it is. Like that's like the normal stuff. But then in sexuality, it goes, for me, I feel a lot deeper. Like how does my vulva look? How do the breasts and, you know, like the whole thing probably.
There's cellulite on my butt.
Yeah, exactly. So, so how do you even like approach that? I don't even know how to put the words. Like, how do you find out that you've got it? I don't even know if I do have it. I'm not sure. But like, I was just thinking because, I've just heard that from a couple of ladies I'm working with in one of my courses. They say like, you know, oh, aging and then sex and all that. And I'm like just wondering, okay, so what is the actual shame around? So I'm wondering about the sexual, like the genitals or all the body parts. How do you approach that? Like, to know that there is shame around there and then how to heal that. Because I assume it's a very personal thing, not including the partner, but maybe. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think first we do our own inner work and then we bring a partner in, which is even more vulnerable in some ways upon, you know, the level of it. But the first way to know is what's the voice in your head? You know, do you have a voice that's saying you're fat? Your genitals are abnormal, you know, your smell isn't okay. Like nobody should look at that. That's gross down there. You know, if any of that is starting to roll around in your head, you know, you have some internalized shame that's in there, or, you know, you're not worthy of sex because you don't look a certain way or a certain age. You know, even with what I was just talking about, reclaiming that, it's like, I used to think that when I turned 31, nobody would want me, you know, like that. When I hit 30, that's over. I'm not sexy anymore. I had such an, and that's been a process, I think, still of just like uncovering that. And then what happens when you have a baby?
Yeah.
And what happens to your vulva? I remember looking, I'm very intimate with my genitals being a sexologist. So I had my own speculum and would look regularly. And I knew what my cervix looked like before I had a baby.
Yeah.
And then I had my son and I remember looking at my cervix for the first time and be like, oh my God, it's not the same, you know, in the morning of body change. And I mean, I know nobody's looking at my cervix, but for me, because I knew what it looked like, that's like this thing. And so, you know, I think that a big piece of it is recognizing that voice and not entertaining it. It's just a thought. It's just a voice in your head. It's just an aspect of yourself. And then starting mirror work, which can be very powerful. You know, just sit in front of a mirror. A lot of people have never looked at their genitals before. So can you sit in front of a mirror and breathe and like really breathe? Because so many people stop, they hold their breath, they look in the mirror, they go, it's like really tense body and not breathing. So can you breathe and can you be with this part of your body that has been so hidden, maybe if you've never looked at it before? And then, you know, if you have a speculum, you can order speculums online and do your own, like, looking inside of yourself, looking at your cervix, learning about your body with curiosity and love, and, you know, noticing, oh, I feel like that piece is ugly, or that piece doesn't feel okay. Okay. When that comes up again, mark it down and then go process it, or go, you know, how can I love that part? What can I find that's good? Not like, cause our brain will go right away to like what's ugly or what we don't like. And then, so I think then that's a big step. And I've sat with women before where for 2 hours, all they do is spit vitriol at themselves. I'm fat, I'm gross, this is ugly. Da, da. And it takes, and I'm like, we're going to sit here until you can find something beautiful. We're going to sit here until it starts to shift, and it will shift. It will start to shift into, oh my gosh, look at this amazing part of my body. This part of my body that can pass a baby through me. This part of my body that can bring me so much pleasure. Look at all its folds and deliciousness. And it will shift after all the vitriol, like we got to bleed the poison out, you know, and get it all out. And then now we come to starting to see things in a different light. And then the next step would be bringing a partner in to gaze with you and say what they love and say what they notice and just presence what's there. And that can be a next step in healing, you know, genital shame specifically.
Yeah. Wow. So beautiful and so not normal to what we, how we experience all this. So how do you go about, because I think that's a really interesting question, about your sexual life when you've got kids. Like, the one thing is, you know, the body changing and all that, hard enough.
Right.
And then all the hormones and being busy being parents, hard enough. But then being in an apartment, house, whatever, with your kids there.
Yep.
So that's what people come up with to me and say, you know, how, why?
And not have shame about, like, oh, we made a noise.
Yeah.
You know, or what if they walk in, you know, get locked doors.
Yeah.
You know, I'm surprised at how many parents don't have locks. I'm like, just get a lock. Problem solved. They're not going to walk in. And, you know, it's interesting research-wise. It shows that when kids walk in on their parents, that is not the trauma. There's very little trauma on that. The trauma comes from silence around sex. The trauma comes from shame around sex, as opposed to being able to have honest, open conversations. There's not, the trauma isn't because somebody walked in on you.
No. Well, our daughter, she's 12. She actually walked in last year. So when she was 11 and, laughed and walked back out. Right, and we talked about it later on. She's like, I'm sorry. I'm like, it's okay. But is there anything going on? She's like, no. So that was like really open, totally easy because we're quite open. But yeah, it's interesting that the shame or the trauma comes from something totally different.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think a lot of parents get worried about such things. But
yeah.
Again, easy problem solved. Get a lock on the door.
Yeah.
You know.
And use it.
Use the lock. But yeah, I mean, I think you point to something that I think we can all have compassion around. It is not easy when we have children and we're busy and we're tired and all of those things. One of the things that my partner and I did when our son was really little was we had intimacy time. And that meant that never came out of the schedule. Every Friday afternoon, we had time that was just our time to explore whatever it was that we wanted to explore erotically during those few hours. We had someone take our son out of the house so we could make as much noise as we wanted. You know, we could play however we wanted. And that was just always like, it was our investment in our relationship to have that time together, no matter what. Would get, you know, nothing got in the way. And if it had to get in the way, then we would reschedule, make sure that we rescheduled it. That was just a must in our relationship. We also had a sex space. So, you know, like a space where it was our intimate space where like kids didn't come. And, you know, it was sacred to dog, you know, no dogs, no kids, no nothing. Mm-hmm. No television. Like it was our sacred space. Not everybody can do that in their home, but
yeah,
you know, we had, being that it's my career, it made it a little bit easier to create
and have your office, basically.
My office.
No desk, but yeah, my office.
And I think being compassionate with yourself, you know, it will change, it will pass. And then before you know it, your kids will be out of the house or teens. And, but yeah, just notice again your shame, because that shame is then teaching your children.
Yes.
You're teaching your children if it's something that's hidden. And again, appropriateness with age appropriateness and things like that. But definitely. Having conversations and saying this is your mom and dad's time, and that's okay. That's actually healthy.
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, we even chose to, now they're 12 and 16, so it's easy, but quite early we chose to tell them, you know, we do have sex, obviously. I guess you know. So when the door is locked, we've probably got sex. We don't want you to come in,
right?
So they just know. So it's normal for them. You know, right. I hear it so often that, you know, kids say, my parents, I can't even imagine them having, because it's so pushed out of normalcy. Right.
It's hidden.
It's so hidden. Yeah. So I was
so
really
then it's
like,
gross, as opposed just a natural thing that human beings do. And you two are here because of this thing that.
Yes.
Builds
to be grateful.
Yeah.
This is so beautiful. It's so good to talk to you. I love this conversation. Seriously love this conversation. So obviously everybody should do the test, do the quiz. So we put the link in the show notes.
Great.
And buy the book by the time, I think it's next week even, but by the time we've got this out, everybody can order the book. Where you can, like, the five erotic types
called
to awaken.
Blueprint for Pleasure. Your Blueprint for Pleasure. This is the US cover.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Your Blueprint for Pleasure. Discover the five erotic types to awaken and fulfill your desires.
Mm. So everybody buy the book, read this. But then you also do like seminars and you've got online work, right?
Yeah, we have online courses. We have trained about, I think, over 350 coaches now. So there's a number of different erotic blueprint coaches out there. And then we also do events. Sometimes we'll have like a big event, you know, 1,000 people or something like that. Which
so
is
what
really
is
cool.
Like, just a quick, how do these, like, what do they look like? Is there like a lot of nakedness?
Our events range from like super PG and then like, you know, kind of tread level up.
Yeah,
like level up depending upon people's comfort level, and everything's always comfort level, you know, whatever you feel safe with. I think our next big event is going to be a festival, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like a music festival, like mixed music and eroticism and art, and just like it's gonna be really fun. I'm really
when
excited.
Is that?
My partner Ian does most of those things. It'll be in October of 2024. So
whereabouts?
In California.
Might need to come over. Sounds really juicy.
It'll be
so
fun.
Good. Yes, it would be so much fun. So, yeah, is there anything else you think of, like, what is needed in the German world to be shared apart from what we've already covered? Is there anything else where you say, okay, this?
Yeah. I think, you know, we've been talking about shame a lot. And I think that fundamentally the thing that healed shame for me, like just blasted it out of the water, was recognizing unconditional love for myself. And I know that sounds really cliche. And I know that we hear it a lot, like love yourself, self-love. But I really think we don't get it. We hear it.
Yeah.
But we don't embody or integrate that or really understand what it means to unconditionally love yourself, which means that there is nothing that you need to be, do, or have. There is nothing that you need to be, do, or have in order to be loved. And sometimes we need someone else to regulate that in our bodies. Someone else who has found unconditional love for themselves, who can unconditionally love you so that your whole system can regulate to what it means to be unconditionally loved. And I remember my mentor saying to me, unconditional love for you from you, and then everybody gets it. And I looked at him like he had three heads. What are you talking about? For me, I'm a monster, don't you know? You know? And it took me a while to really understand what that meant. And I think that when you really know yourself, and sexuality can be a tool for that self-realization, that when you really know yourself, you can't help but love yourself because you're magnificent.
Get chills from that. Mm-hmm. So beautiful. Thank you for sharing that wisdom. Mm-hmm. Perfect way to end. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And all the work you bring out. Beautiful.
Ist das nicht toll? Wahnsinn, was für eine Frau. Ich komme gerade noch sozusagen aus dem Gespräch mit ihr und bin ganz berührt und erfüllt und finde es einfach so wichtig, diese Arbeit, und merke, dass ich da schon ein ganzes Stück gegangen bin, und gleichzeitig fühlt es sich an, als wäre ich noch in den Kinderschuhen. Ich habe ja einige Fragen gestellt, die für mich wichtig sind, und freue mich jetzt da, das Experimentieren noch mehr zu starten. Und ich hoffe so sehr, dass dich das erreicht und dass du mit dir und deinem Körper und deinem Partner, Partnerin, deiner Sexualität, dass du da einen direkteren Zugang zu findest. Wir verlinken natürlich alles in den Shownotes, den Quiz auf jeden Fall, ihr Buch auf jeden Fall. Also ich glaube, diese Arbeit an sich selbst, mit sich selbst, kann für uns alle ein unglaublicher Durchbruch sein, um die ureigene Weiblichkeit und die ureigene Männlichkeit in uns, wir haben ja immer beide Anteile, zu finden, zu integrieren, mehr in unseren Körper zu finden, das alles mehr zu verkörpern und in unseren Partnerschaften noch mehr Intimität und Nähe zu schaffen. Also ich find's gut und hoffe sehr, dass du ganz viel davon mitnehmen konntest.